Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Without John Peel, we might never have loved the gloom of Joy Division. I'm John Schaefer, and coming up on Soundcheck, the late BBC radio host John Peel introduced countless new bands through his so-called Peel sessions. Now the world's getting a peek inside his massive record collection. We'll hear all about it. Later. Lee Rinaldo joins us and recalls what it was like when he recorded several Peel sessions as guitarist for the veteran alternative rock band Sonic Youth. And he'll do a soundcheck session with us. Rinaldo plays songs from his new solo record, Between the Times and the Tides, live in our studio. All of that on BBC Soundcheck, right after the news. And since you're listening to a podcast, you don't have to listen to the news. But before we actually get to the body of the show, I want to ask you a favor. Tell us what you think of the Soundcheck podcast. What do you like? What don't you like? Your opinion counts, and we want to keep making the best podcast we can. So send us an email, soundcheck@wnyc.org. All right, that's soundcheck@wnyc.org. And now, on with the show.
And I gotta give my demo to John Peel. I hope he loves my band. And I gotta give my demo to John Peel. I hope he understands. Take a chance. Be brave. Don't be scared. Give him your tape. Hey,
he told her he was. A look inside the vault of Britain's ultimate super collector. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today, remembering the BBC DJ John Peel through his record collection. Plus, Lee Rinaldo, longtime guitarist for the band Sonic Youth, joins us with a solo album and his band for a live performance. But we begin with the late broadcaster and super collector, John Peel. During his nearly 40 years on the air as radio host for the BBC, John Peel spun cutting-edge tracks and boosted careers with his legendary Peel Sessions. Over the course of those years, he put together an enormous and meticulously organized music collection. And now, 8 years after Peel's death, parts of that collection are finding a home online. Joining us to tell us more about the project are Tom Barker of the John Peel Center for Creative Arts and John Peel's wife, Sheila Ravenscross. Tom, Sheila, thank you both for being with us.
Hi, John.
Pleasure.
Tom, let me start with you, the project. First of all, John Peel is kind of a rumor here in the States. Who, in a nutshell, who was John Peel?
That's a difficult question in a nutshell. John was probably the most fondly regarded radio DJ of a generation, I would say. He was incredibly well respected and known for his sort of real down-to-earth style and eclectic taste.
And he was also known for sort of being one of those people to whom you would go to find out what the next big thing was going to be. Usually, he would be the one who made the next big thing big.
I think certainly, yeah, he had a hand in launching an awful lot of bands, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Through something called the Peel Sessions. And I want to talk about, you know, this the Center for Creative Arts and the project that you guys are involved in. But the Peel Sessions basically were the bands would come in and play live for him. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and often recorded in London, but some recorded in the home studio.
Mm-hmm. And how unusual was this for Britain at the time?
When the sessions first started, I think Sheila could probably give you more of an idea about what they meant in those early days. I was still but a glimmer in my father's eye.
Sheila, was John doing something really kind of unusual? Was it kind of a holdover from the so-called golden age of radio to have live music in the studio?
There were quite a few programs on the BBC at that time who did have live sessions, and the difference between those and John's sessions were that a lot of his were unheard of bands that normally the BBC wouldn't have broadcast.
Right.
And therefore he was sticking his neck out, putting them on, which is why now they're so important.
So in November of 2001, John Peel did one of these Peel sessions with an American band that was just beginning to make a name for itself, the White Stripes.
Deadly is on the dirty ground when I know you're not around. Shiny tops and soda pops, when I hear your lips make a sound. When I hear your lips make a sound. 30 notes in the mailbox, it'll tell you that I'm coming home. And I think I'm gonna stick around for a while, say you're not alone. For a while, say you're not alone. Hey. Hey. If you could hear a piano fall, you can hear me coming down the hall. If I can trust in your pretty voice, I don't think I need to see at all. Don't think I need to see at all. Soft hair in a velvet tongue, I'm gonna give you what
Jack
you
White
can.
And the White Stripes, recorded November 8th, 2001, live on one of these Peel sessions that the late BBC disc jockey John Peel would do from time to time, actually quite regularly. We're speaking with Tom Barker of the John Peel Center for Creative Arts and Sheila Ravenscroft, who is John Peel's wife and co-author of Margrave of the Marshes, which is John's posthumously released book, his autobiography. Sheila, where was that White Stripes session done?
It was actually done at our home. And although people would think we had a very elaborate studio, we don't. It was a corner of a room in the house where John broadcast every Thursday night his Radio 1 programmes live. And it worked superbly well. And mm-hmm. then every few weeks we would have a live band who would come into the house in the afternoon, squash into this tiny room, do a sound check, and then go out live on the Thursday night. The sound quality was absolutely superb, and it was such good fun. And they'd come for a sound check in the afternoon when John wasn't here because he was busy doing a Radio 4 programme for the BBC in the afternoon. And then in the evening, John would get home, we'd have a big supper together, and then at 10 o'clock, we'd go live on air.
Wow.
And it was enormous fun. And we had, obviously, the White Stripes were one of the bands that did such a session. Yeah.
So you basically were there with these bands while John was off doing his other show.
Well, they were coming in and doing sound checks, and I was feeding them.
He established himself as a real presence on the airwaves there in the UK, and it probably didn't take long for people to start sending him their music, their tapes, their records. I mean, that Helen Love song we heard at the top of the show, the John Peel Roadshow, you know, sending him my tape. I hope he listens. Many, many people must have had that that reaction. How did the collection begin?
Well, obviously, early days on, when he first started working for originally the pirate radio stations, Radio London, and then latterly Radio One, people would send in originally demo tapes because they were tapes, cassettes. And then, obviously, later on, there would be CDs. But everywhere we went, we came back with carrier bagfuls of people giving us. It didn't matter who they were, where you went, whether you went shopping. Everybody would have a cassette or a CD that they would give to you. Mm-hmm. And also, so many arrived in the mailbag, and the house was full of demo tapes. Yeah.
And Tom, I mean, as one of the directors of the John Peel Center for Creative Arts, you've been kind of going through this and trying to figure out a way to give the public access. Kind of pick up the story there. What is the current status of John Peel's collection?
The current status of it is that it's owned by the family, and we're working with them to... And obviously Sheila is completely part of the John Peel Centre. She's one of our co-directors. Mm-hmm. So she's completely hands-on with the centre, and family have been looking at how they can sort of avoid it just sitting gathering dust, essentially,
right,
and make it available to people. And when The Space, which is an Arts Council-funded project, when that was announced, it seemed like it was an opportunity to start to explore how we could do it, because obviously it's an enormous collection, and it's very personal as well.
How big is it, roughly?
In numbers,
yeah.
It's 26,000 LPs. We've got a figure of 40,000 singles, but whether that's unknown, it could be more, it could be a few less, but mm-hmm. and many, many thousands of CDs. Again, that's a number that's not really known, but I think there's shed loads, literally. There's rooms and sheds full of the collection all over the place, and really it's the LPs that we're going to be starting with. The LPs were kind of meticulously catalogued. John hand typed out a little catalogue card for every single LP in the collection. So mm-hmm. the catalogue cards are stored alphabetically, and then they're each given a number for where the record sits in the collection. So that was a way for him to be able to cross-reference and go back and find records and go through things. So because we've got the LPs are kind of organised, that was a good place to start. And then we had to kind of think, well, where do we start? We've only got a limited amount of money. We've got a very short timescale to try and launch what we're doing.
And what you're doing is you're putting these for the LPs, you're putting those index cards you're talking about and the album art online, and then are there links to actually hear some of the music as well?
Yeah, what we've done is essentially created a website, which is an attempt to have a sort of interactive archive, a room. You enter the space and you walk into John's home studio, and you see it there, and there are some film clips, and there are links to Peel sessions, those that we mm-hmm. can link out to, and then there are some clips of radio shows and some photos and social media and things like that, and then you can walk into the record collection, so you can go through that website and you sort of virtually browse through the records as they are on the shelves.
And as you say, he was very meticulous about hand typing these index cards and giving all of the LPs catalog numbers. Number 0001 was an album by Mike Absalom called Save the Last Gherkin for Me. You can actually see that card. It's on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And this is a little bit of the music associated with it.
Crystal Hall, the wind man tumbled down the corridors of time. And there it was, too hard to find. Try to forget that friend of mine, that friend of mine. The sky is dark, it looks like rain. What brings you back so soon again? The sailors standing by their boats of glass. Ignore the waves, too high to pass. Try to forget that friend of mine, that friend of mine.
Well, if you go browsing through the late John Peel's record collection, you'll find that at number one, the first album in the collection from 1968, 69, somewhere around there. That's Mike Absalom. That Friend of Mine comes from an album called Save the Last Gherkin for Me. John Peel's hand-typed index card for the album is on the website. It's on our website at wnyc.org/soundcheck. And the John Peel Center for Creative Arts now going through the late broadcaster's massive collection, giving you digital images and links to music. It's all on thespace.org. You'll find a link, again, on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. And two of the directors of the Peel Center are with me on the line, Tom Barker and Sheila Ravenscroft, who was John's wife and co-author of his posthumously released autobiography. And Sheila, it was very much a teenager's game when John first started on the radio, and he seems to have kept that sense of youthful enthusiasm all through his career. How did he manage that?
I seriously wonder. You're absolutely right. He had a thirst for everything new, And although occasionally, yes, he would listen to things that he'd heard before, he constantly was searching for new things. And many, many times when he would find something that he thought was so absolutely brilliant that everybody should listen to it, and people would kick against it. For instance, when everybody had been going through the hippie era and then the punk era came, And people thought he'd gone mad. But then, obviously, ultimately, the punk era became enormously popular, and he was right. So people, to begin with, used to think, what is he doing? But he always knew what he was doing. There were times when I doubted, but he invariably got it right. And it was just this thirst for new things.
Well, we actually took a clip of John Peel off of the John Peel Center for Creative Arts website, in which he talks about maintaining this kind of youthful approach and sort of, you know, the way that he expressed that enthusiasm was giving ratings of 1 to 3 stars to the various bands that are in his collection, except for the Undertones, to whom he gave 28 stars.
Walters again once said, and it's an unkind thing, but I know exactly what he means, and it has some accuracy to it. He said that the program would be in real trouble if I ever reached puberty. And I do know what he means, because obviously my enthusiasms would seem to be, on the surface anyway, the enthusiasms of a 13, 14-year-old, in that you're always looking for something new and never entirely satisfied with what you've got. And when the time comes when I lose my enthusiasm for it, or something, there's some major development and I feel, well, I don't feel involved in this, this has nothing to do with me, then that's when I'd have to, I mean, I couldn't fake it.
And he didn't. 28-star rating for this group, The Undertones. The 1978 song Teenage Kicks from the Undertones, a favorite of the lifelong teenager John Peel, longtime BBC DJ and host of The Peel Sessions. Sheldon in Brooklyn leaves this comment on our webpage. For anyone not from the UK who has dived through mountains of vinyl through the years or simply through bootlegs, coming across any artist that did a John Peel session, from a conventional rock band like the Smiths, to the minimalist techno of Richie Hawtin's Plastic Man meant a legitimate stamp of approval from one of the greatest ears in the history of radio. So John Peel's reputation did extend across the Atlantic, mainly, Sheila, through those Peel sessions that we were talking about before. How often were they, was it a regularly scheduled thing, or was it just a kind of catch-as-catch-can?
The Peel sessions were, every program John did, there was a live session from a band. So that happened, you know, whatever. So obviously some of them were kept, a lot of them weren't. They should have all been kept because they were gems. Yeah, every program he did, there were no... I think it was part of the BBC policy that you had to have live music within a program.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. did I would expect that over the years some bands would come back, do multiple sessions, he'd build up
I wish that I'd got the figures in front of me as to how many full sessions were done, because there were some bands that did many, many sessions.
I think there might have been 18 by the fall.
18 by the fall. Hmm.
I think probably they got the record.
What about in 1990, he did a session with Babes in Toyland.
Yes.
I mean, would bands like this become sort of close to John and to you and the family?
Oh, Babes in Toyland were terribly close to us because they did all the festivals over here in England. And the children, our children, used to go to the festivals and were very much part of John's music, and then would come over and do gigs over here. And so the fact that we chose Babes in Toyland to be our favourite for B is indicative of the fact that they were a huge family favourite, mm. and a John favourite, obviously, because they were just so important at that period of time in their lives, yeah.
Well, they are number 22,348 in the catalog of John Peel's record collection. From his live John Peel session of 1990, this is Babes in Toyland, the Minneapolis rock trio with Catatonic. From John Peel's massive archive of tapes and LPs and CDs, all of which is being organized and made, well, some of it at least, being made available to the public through the John Peel Center for Creative Arts. That is Babes in Toyland. Catatonic is from a live performance on a John Peel session from 1990. Tom Barker, you mentioned before, you know, getting a bit of funding and a space. Is there going to be a physical space, apart from the website, where people can go and actually, you know, experience at least some of the archive?
I must just correct the point that I made earlier about the fall. They actually recorded 24 sessions rather than 18.
Wow!
So I just wanted to correct that while I was on
24 Peel sessions for the fall.
Yeah. Yeah. But in terms of a physical space for the collection, I know that the family have been having conversations with various people, including the British Library. What happens with the physical collection is as yet sort of undecided. I think it will require an enormous space to kind of do it justice. Because mm-hmm. one of the really interesting things is the insides of the covers and what's inside the records when we pull them open, from kind of the letters that bands sent to John when they attached the record, and promo photos and old magazine articles that he's obviously kept and put in there and used it as a kind of filing system as well. So trying to make all of that information available and so that people can really kind of engage with it in a way that they can probably interact with. I think it would benefit from being both online and in a physical space. And,
absolutely.
And obviously yeah. Somewhere where one could actually listen to all the music would be a real key part of it, because that's one of the difficult things with the website is obviously making music available for the public to listen to online is quite a complicated process to work through.
Right.
So at the moment.
But Tom, also, as you say, the idea that there's all this correspondence, sometimes like stuck inside the records as they were mailed to John Peel, that is also a really amazing and interesting part of the whole project. Good luck with it. It's the John Peel Center for Creative Arts, and you can find a link to the website on our page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Tom Barker is one of the directors of the John Peel Center for Creative Arts. So is Sheila Ravenscroft, John Peel's wife and co-author of his posthumous autobiography, Margrave of the Marshes. Tom, Sheila, thank you both for being with us.
A pleasure.
Thanks, John.
This is Soundcheck.
Thank you.
I hope he loves my band. Demo to John Peel. I hope he understands. Take a chance. Be brave. Don't be scared. Give him your tape.
In a moment, more on John Peel as Sonic Youth guitarist Lee Rinaldo and drummer Steve Shelley discuss their recording sessions with the BBC broadcaster. And then Lee and Steve will be joined by the rest of Lee Rinaldo's band for a live performance of songs from his new solo album, Between the Times and the Tides. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. As we just heard, the late British DJ John Peel introduced thousands of bands to a new listening audience over the course of his nearly 40 years on the air. One of those bands was the veteran alternative rock act Sonic Youth. In 1988, they were just making their way, and they made their way into the hands of John Peel, who brought them in to record not one, but four of his John Peel sessions. In the background is a recording from their 1988 session, and joining me to talk about their work with the late John Peel are two of the members of Sonic Youth, Lee Rinaldo, Steve Shelley. Guys, welcome back.
Hi. Thanks. Nice to be here.
Lee, this song in the background, not a Sonic Youth song, is it?
My New House by The Fall.
By The Fall. What is it with The Fall? I mean, we just learned that the guy had The Fall come in 24 times.
I think it was pretty well known that he loved The Fall. And we loved The Fall, you know, and this was going to be our second Peel session, and we were casting about for what to do, and we thought it would be fun to do a set of Fall songs. And we threw a curveball in the mix because The Fall had just recently covered the Kinks' Victoria at that point, which we loved. Mm-hmm. And so we did three Fall songs, technically, and a Kinks song, but we called it our Fall session.
Now, were the Peel sessions important to you guys as a band at that point, 1980?
Oh, yeah. As individuals, as a band, it was important. We'd heard about them for so long. And to finally get over there and to record at the studio at Maida Vale was really important.
So you're in the studio, not in his home, right?
Yeah, and you don't meet John at the session, which I was really disappointed the first time, because I'd heard about these sessions for so long. And I thought John would be there and he'd be overseeing the session. And, you know, we're going to do the session for John Peel. But you're in a studio with engineers and you have a whole day to record three or four songs. And we always threw ourselves a curveball. Like the Fall session, we didn't learn the songs before we got to the session.
Uh-oh.
So we had to learn the songs and the lyrics. And so we brought along our friend Epic Soundtracks. From Swell Maps, who was a great, great friend of ours. And he helped decipher Marky Smith's lyrics for us the day of the recording. And the next time we went in, I don't know if it was that year or later, maybe a year down the road, we made up songs in the studio. So we kind of made it difficult for ourselves. We weren't really good at promoting our latest album or our latest single, which we could have taken advantage of. But
so in four sessions, did you ever in fact meet John Peel?
Well, I think I met him just long enough to shake his hand and say hello. It was either at he hosted this this Meltdown Festival one year in London, and it was either there or we were talking about this before, and it was either there or at one of the big English festivals that where he was DJing a set on the same stage where we were playing, something like that. But like Steve said, he wasn't in the studio, but you know, we'd listened to so many of those Peel sessions from other bands, and they were legendary. You know, to hear Joy Division sessions or The Falls or so many
or other
bands. Birthday
Party or whoever.
Yeah, they were like very special. You know, other recordings of songs you knew or special new recordings.
All right, so John from Williamsburg leaves this comment on our webpage. My family traveled to Ireland and or England every year when I was a kid. I was introduced to The Fall thanks to John Peel. They became my favorite band ever. Never been the same since. It's only when John Peel died that I even knew how much he loved them as well. Now, John Peel's been gone a couple of years, but, you know, the year after he died is the year YouTube came around. You know, so like the whole world of how we get music and where we go to find music has changed so dramatically since Peel's death.
Right. Well, that's another thing people don't remember is like at the time he was doing all those sessions for all those years, access was not very easy. So, you know, to find these special, you know, and they weren't released. They were just broadcast on the radio and then occasionally traded on bootleg cassettes or whatever, you know. And so it was always incredibly magical to find those sessions.
Especially here, where they were like literally coming from another world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was a rumor, like you said earlier. It's like, I heard so-and-so on the Peel sessions. Yeah. But
we're speaking with Lee Rinaldo, guitarist from Sonic Youth, Steve Shelley, drummer from Sonic Youth. We've been talking so far about the Peel sessions. In a moment, though, the guys are going to get behind their respective instruments with the rest of Lee's band and play for us. Here is another bit of those 1988 John Peel session recordings, and this is the one Lee was talking about before. Sonic Youth doing Victoria, originally by the Kinks, later covered by The Fall.